Good morning. Welcome to the February 21, 2017 meeting of the Chelan Public Utility District. This morning we will be meeting in executive session for approximately 3 hours, coming out of executive session at noon, and if we need to continue, we will go back into executive session. And all of our regular business will be conducted this afternoon. At this time, we will move into executive session to review the performance of a public employee as authorized by RCW 42.30.1101G. This is Chelan PUD coming out of executive session. It's February 21, 2017, approximately 12:15. No votes were taken, no decisions were made while in executive session. At this time, we will recess and reconvene at 1 p.m. for our regular session. Good afternoon. Welcome to the afternoon session of the February 21, 2017 Chelan PUD Commission meeting. We met this morning in executive session. We made no decisions, took no votes. And today, this afternoon, we're going to have both a study and a business session. And before we get started, I'd like to remind everybody that's here today that this meeting is being recorded. And so if you wish to speak to any item on the agenda, please come up and use the microphone and state your name and address for the record. Additionally, if anybody has their cell phone in a position where it will make noise when it rings, please silence it or turn it off at this time. And four of the five commissioners are here. Commissioner Bowles is not in attendance, and all regular staff are here at this meeting. And with that, we'll start with item one on our study session, and that is the Pledge of Allegiance and Safety Minute, led by Dave Parkell.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good afternoon. I'm Dave Parkhill. I'm the Safety Training Program Administrator here at the district. And February, the first week of February, is National Burn Awareness Month. Now, I know it's not the first of February, but I was gone. And so, coming back, I wanted to talk a little bit about that. First of all, how many of you like to spend time working in your kitchens? Cooking, boiling water, hot saucepans. How many of you have kids or curious grandkids that might like to watch you as you're doing that? Perfect. This is going to be a real good safety minute. Well, first of all, the do's. Set your water heater temperature to the medium setting, to about 120 degrees, where it's not too hot, but not too cold as well. Create a no-kid zone around your kitchen. This is really good to know, especially for those of you with little kids, little infants. They'll be walking before you know it, Tyler. You want to make sure, especially if you're cooking, boiling some water, that they know that the kitchen area is a area where they should not be. Keep hot drinks away from the edge of table. So if you have some hot coffee, hot tea, what have you, you want to keep that away, arm's reach. And place pots and pans in the back part of the burner, back burner with the handles away, just to keep little curious arms from grabbing, pouring that onto them. Now the don'ts, you don'ts. Never leave a child unattended in the bathtub. If you have to leave, take them with you. You just never want to leave them alone in there. Never allow young children to adjust the water temperature or sit near the handle. Not that that ever happens, but it does. So you want to be aware of that. You don't want to set anything hot on tabletops within reach. Because once again, as I said, they could grab it, not know what it is, and pour that on them. Some of the facts, 1,100 children die every year from either fires or burns. And it happens. That's startling. So what can you do? Well, first of all, if they do get burned, say pour some hot water on their hands or what have you, cool water. Cool water under the faucet is the best thing to do. I remember years ago when my now 19-year-old was a lot younger, he grabbed my wife's curling iron, and he's got a pretty good pain tolerance, and he was holding on to it for a while, showing my wife, obviously it wasn't my curling iron, but he was holding on, and his hand got pretty burned and still has some scars. So that's another thing, even around the bathroom, curling irons, things that are plugged in, irons. You definitely want to keep an eye around that. So good idea. Once again, keep those items away from children. And that's our safety minute.
Super.
Any questions?
Thank you. Good safety minute.
Thank you very much.
For parents and grandparents.
And grandparents, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
All right. Before we get to item two, the approval agenda, just wanted to publicly apologize to Commissioner Congdon for the ugly way that Gonzaga handled San Francisco this past
week.
Stop.
You don't want to get me started.
And for those of you who aren't aware, Commissioner Congdon's son-in-law is the head coach at the University of San Francisco. And so, they're building. She'll get me later. So.
We're currently tied for fourth place, probably soon to be tied for third place, and it's his first year.
Yes.
19 wins.
That's
so.
Great.
That's
yes.
Good.
Yes.
That's really good.
But, yeah, it'll take a while to catch up with Gonzaga.
A couple injuries, too, right?
Yeah, they've had some injuries, too. That's right. So now on to item two.
You're so bad.
approval of the agenda. At this time, any item on the regular agenda can be transferred to the consent agenda. And if there's anybody in the audience that wishes to have an item considered, the commissioners would have to take action, but could consider any additional things that might need to come before the commission. So commissioners, the regular agenda, any items that need to be moved to the consent agenda? Any recommendations?
Mr. Chairman, I recommend that we move resolution item number 8, 9, 10, and 11 to consent.
Ah. Were you wanting item 8 moved? Or?
yes.
Okay. 8, 9, 10, and 11. And there's a recommendation to move all four of those to the consent agenda. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, we'll consider those four to be moved to the consent agenda. All right. Item 3, Audit Committee Annual Update.
Good afternoon. My name is Stacy Jagla. I'm the Internal Audit Manager for the district, and I'm here today to give the Audit Committee Annual Report, which is a requirement. It's part of the board's balanced scorecard metric that we do this. So if you recall, the audit committee has been in place since 2004. It was created to provide as a best practice and also to provide independent reporting for the internal audit department. And it also helps fulfill oversight responsibilities for the district's accounting and financial reporting processes. Internal and external audit processes, enterprise risk management, our system of internal control, and the district's process for monitoring compliance also is a regular agenda item on the audit committee. So our commissioners for 2016 on the committee were Commissioner Smith and Berggren, and this year for 2017, we're having Commissioner Smith again. You and we also have Commissioner Arsenault new on the committee, so we're excited to have his participation. The committee meets quarterly, and in your report, it's a standard format we've been using a while. We've just tried to take each quarterly meeting and recap the topics and some of the discussion that occurred at the meeting. So you'll see a pretty consistent format there. As I explained, it's the internal and external audits, of which on the May meeting, we had PricewaterhouseCoopers here as our external auditors, and the district received a clean opinion and clean audit from Pricewaterhouse on our financial statements. Also in the recap, you'll see enterprise risk management, compliance topics, and other financial reporting topics. We just did our January 2017 meeting, which is fourth quarter. We had the state auditor's office here and also got a clean audit for our 2015 accountability audit from the state auditors. So the rest of the items on there were just, like I said, they're recaps from our quarterly meetings, and I was just wondering if there were any questions specific to those items.
Any questions? While you're thinking about that, I'd like to comment. I've been on the audit committee now for a few years, and Commissioner McKenna, we have established an operating system here at the board level that the president and vice president serve, and so as officers rotate through, those members go on the audit committee. I have found my time there incredibly valuable, and there's a whole group of very dedicated people that take that role very seriously. It's not just an exercise in activity. People bring forward areas that they want to have evaluated, and I just want to say thank you for a continued good job.
Thank you. And I know that we have an audit committee team site where we put all the information out that we discuss at the quarterly meetings. Usually we've had the former commissioners pass on that information, but all commissioners actually have access to our audit committee team site. So I might sit down with Commissioner Ken. I know we've talked about the audit committee, but show you how to use that team site in case you're interested in popping out there and looking at it too. So what's going on?
Well, and I just would like to jump in there and say that the state auditors, of course, charge the district for their audit. And before they do the audit, they give an estimate as what they think the cost of that audit will be. Because of the diligent work of staff here at the district, they were able to shave over $10,000 off the cost and charges to the district. So I just want to say that is a wonderful staff participation in the audit process and in helping the district to save money in the process as well. So thank you very much.
Good. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Commissioners, I just supervise the audit group, and I want to extend my personal gratitude and appreciation to Stacy and her team. They do exceptional work, and my personal dissatisfaction with John Stoll, who keeps hiring away my auditors. To this
Yeah, great.
So it started with Commissioner Congdon, now it's John Stoll. This is a good meeting. All right.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks a lot. LED street light update.
Thank you. Andrew Grissell, Manager Energy Development Conservation here at Chelan PUD, to provide an update on our reviewing and looking at doing a countywide LED street light replacement project. And the last time was a little while ago where we talked about an inventory study we were doing. We had put up some pilot lights and we're taking feedback from community members. So this is that next step. So here's what we'll cover today. But as we cover through this, I'd like that we cover today's agenda. I'd like for the board to look at it through the view how staff is proposing to partner with local government entities. These are the cities and the county within Chelan County, where Chelan PD would use its contracting and project management experience to manage the project, while we would support local government entities as they would lead engagement within their communities. We believe this is an effective and efficient way to move a good for the whole county project forward in a manner that also meets some time sensitive grant funding opportunities that are available. And so as we're going through this, that we'll also summarize that in the end of the presentation, but wanted to get that out in front. So we'll review benefits of LED streetlights, light emitting diodes, but I think most people know them by LED. Provide a little bit of the history of what we've done here at the utility. We'll look at some projects by the numbers. We'll discuss the financials as well as grant funding opportunity numbers, kilowatt hour saved, those sorts of things. We'll look at some project risks, and then we'll review the project through our decision criteria lens. We have a decision criteria that lists multiple different lenses that we want to review a project through, and so we'll walk through that. There are many benefits to the LED streetlights that align with our values. The first value it aligns with is our safety value. As you can see from this photo, the streetlights, an LED streetlight, when the upgrade is completed, there is a much greater detail. There's a lot better light resolution. There's a lot better color rendition. This all provides better and more safe driving conditions, as well as being able to see a color of a car. So, for example, if something were happening and you needed witnesses, you could actually tell, you know, it's not just a grayish colored sedan, it's a green colored sedan, you know, any number of those. And so safety is a big attribute, a big benefit of the streetlights. And I think this photo shows well. This side is the before and this is the after. And where you can't see the different colors in this one, as well as there's a lot of dark spots. Those dark spots with the same lights in the same locations are taken care of, as well as you can see the color rendition is much better. And then as we look at our financial stewardship goals and values, there's a lower operation and maintenance cost associated with these streetlights. On average, we have estimates of around $28 a year per fixture in O&M savings. And when you pile that on the number of lights that there are, that's significant. There's a lot lower energy usage, in the 50 to 70% lower energy usage. In some cases, depending on where they're located, what kind of lighting is needed at that location. For this particular project, there is grant funding available, and I'll go through those numbers a little bit later, but that makes the project attractive. And looking at it as one project, you know, as one large countywide project, there's efficiencies to be gained from, you know, ordering large quantities of a light. You know, you're going to get better pricing. You're going to go through the process once versus multiple times as small changes get made throughout the, if it were, you know, if each entity were doing it on their own at different points in time. So from an environmental stewardship, you can see the difference in decreased lighting pollution. This is actually a California photo based off Mount Wilson. But this is before the lighting back in the 90s. And this is afterwards. You can see the golden glow away. You can see a lot, you know, where it's supposed to be dark is dark, where it's supposed to be light is light. And so from an area where we really enjoy our outdoors and what we have here from an environmental standpoint, from a physical environment standpoint, at night, they're a great benefit for that. And then responding to feedback, this is our trustworthiness. Back in 2015, we, as part of an effort to reach out, to do outreach to our local government entities, we were asking them regarding energy efficiency projects, or what is it that you would like to see? And LED streetlights rose to the top of the list almost across the board with everyone we spoke to. So we're trying to be proactive in meeting them. Again, you know, proactive approach also with operational excellence. You know, we're committed to continuous improvement. And this is the next step in improving our county, improving our the way our street lighting is done. And so we're just looking at ways to do that. So this is a project history. I'll go through this fairly quickly. But in 2014, Chelan PUD sponsored a LED streetlight symposium with the local governments. There was a lot moving going on with that with the LED streetlights at the time. There were a lot of players, a lot of just different commerce and transportation improvement board and other funding sources. And there was just a lot moving. And so the cities were showing an interest in this. And so we sponsored, we brought in manufacturers, we brought in energy service companies that install these lights, and we brought in commerce and transportation improvement board. So we had everyone in one spot that they could ask questions and we could get information out on the table with everybody. That led to 2015, where we selected a contractor to conduct a survey or a lighting design. So this was the inventory study. What do we have? How many numbers of what kind of lights are where? This is an important next step when we're moving forward. In 2016, I'll show a little bit of the results later. The survey and design was completed, and we also did some outreach. We did a pilot project at 5 locations here in Wenatchee. We did some outreach to the community, especially in those areas, but we also had a website and we did some radio ads, those sorts of things. We identified and confirmed what state funding was available. And then we also coordinated internally with our Chelan PUD work group, such as our lighting standards group. And then in 2017, we were meeting with each of the local governments again and really getting confirmation on this idea of, if we manage the project, we'll support you in your leading engagement with your constituents in your communities. So this is just an example. This is the what would come out of a GIS mapping. There's lots of lights all over. but on the right-hand side is where it really gets useful, too, is that, okay, in a certain city, where are the lights? Where are they located? How many are they? And even additional information was, what type of light were they put on? What type of pole were they on? What is the wattage of the lamp? All of that information was collected and will be used as we move forward. In total, 4,200 streetlights were throughout the cities and the county were identified. This was a little higher than what we had anticipated. And on top of the streetlights, we also did area lights, too. So the lights that are like in a park, they don't count as streetlights. We just did an inventory of those as well at the same time, and there are 6,200 total lights. So 2,000 of those would be the area lights, roughly 4,200 are the streetlights. And although this project is only the streetlights only, so I wanted to be clear on that. So this is the estimated energy savings and project cost. The costs were developed and estimated by the same company that did the inventory. They have done these projects before and have a good idea of what's needed, where, when, and how much they are. So roughly 4,250 streetlights were identified. Currently, our usage is over 4 million kilowatt hours. With the design as it is right now, it's estimated that we could save over 3 million kilowatt hours. And so we could take those savings down, three quarters of the way, or three times. So for a proposed kilowatt of 943,000. And to kind of put that in perspective, that 3 million is about 0.4 average megawatts, and that roughly equates to around 150 homes.
I can jump in. Is that over the life expectancy of the streetlights?
That's on an annual average.
Annual average.
Yeah. Well, it's on annual usage, and it's not the annual average. That's the annual current kilowatt hours that are used.
Thank you.
Yeah. And as I mentioned earlier, there are several funding sources available, and these are estimated at this time, but they're provided with the information that we have available now. Transportation Improvement Board. This is funding that goes to the small cities of less than 5,000 customers, and they provide an amount of almost $600,000, or they could provide an amount up to $600,000. Washington Department of Commerce. Last year we went for a grant and received it for $150,000, and now that we have the new data and the new information, we intend to go back for an additional $200,000 in March, and so we're preparing that application now. And these are grants that we don't actually receive. They don't give us a lump of money and that it sits in an account where we have to track it. It's where we receive an invoice, it gets sent to them, and they pay the invoice. And so we contract for the dollars, but they're not brought within our financial system. And then we have PUD incentives we can offer based off our based off of our financial model that we use to evaluate energy efficiency projects. And given the amount of savings, we can offer up to almost $1.2 million. And so for total to cover that $1.9 million project cost. And then if we get that $200,000, that would just reduce the amount that we would have to. Any questions on that before I move on? And then we did some financial analysis and based on current assumptions. And so our base cases are streetlight inventory numbers with current pricing on energy, our expected cost of the project of $1.9 million. And that's going to be this one right here. And it looks positive. It looks like there's benefit there, but knowing that things don't always go perfectly, we ran some scenarios around those. We increased the cost by 15% to see what that would do. There is a reduction in net benefits over the 20 years, and Now we decreased the value of energy carbon, and so that was a large driver. So if those go down by 25%, it reduces it down. And then going really, really extreme, we looked at, well, what if we get cost increases and that value of energy goes down by 25%? And there's where you start seeing the project get into trouble. But if we, one of the ways to mitigate around that is getting those additional grant funds, because that will, that's not included. That $200,000 isn't included in here that I mentioned from the prior slide. And then you can see how important the grants are, because if we didn't get any grant funding, the project does not make sense to do. From our Chelan PUD, Chelan customer perspective.
Quick question, knowing that the LED lights, the physical light itself is relatively expensive and the payback is based on longevity. Mm-hmm. What type of replacement did you factor into your numbers here? Because they don't all last the 20 years that they say.
Right. There are warranties on them, so their replacement's up to 10 years. And so we do have 10-year warranties. Generally, what has been found with these is that if they fail, they fail quickly. And that's what we've been learning. And so there is that. And then with regards to the actual looking at a failure rate, we didn't do that as much as figure that into, well, it could be one of these scenarios. It could fall within one of these scenarios that dollar amount of replacement on those could do that. So we didn't do a specific analysis around that number.
I love LEDs, but yep. My experience is there is a failure.
There is. There definitely is. And the design work is, and the costs and the estimates were designed around that as well, understanding that number. So some of the project risks, grant funding, as you saw, is extremely important to the project. So we have secured 150 from Commerce already. We're applying for 200 more. And we would secure the TIB funding prior to contract execution to make sure we have everything lined up there. Resources required to engage stakeholders. As you know, stakeholder engagement can be very resource intensive. And so as we move forward with the county and the cities, we've asked them to take that role on. We'll still support them. We would be providing the updates and information to them, and we would help them with that, but they would be a primarily working on that. Customer lighting issues after installation, so a light goes in and it goes out, or it lights up somebody's bedroom. Those are common themes that can occur. And we've talked with the city of Chelan, who has done some of these lights already, and so we've spoken with them. And what a good way to do that is to have a contractor that works as a coordinator between the installers and the customers, and they take the response, and you make sure you build into your scope of work and your contract that you will go back and fix within a time period. Go back and fix any of those items. So if they do, someone puts on a light and it does light up their bedroom, you have a contractor. Within the contract you have, you will go back and take care of that. So we'll work on those. And then key resources unavailable and needed. I've got a schedule up that I'll bring up a little bit later. But we've developed flexibility in the schedule to help accommodate those key resources. And so we feel that at the time we're in good shape for that, because there are, we have other big projects going on. We have a CIS project going on, and we have other large projects. And so we have to make sure that we're, as our schedule is developed, that it can meet those other competing projects. So here's it through our decision criteria lens, impact to customers. In general, most of the scenarios have a positive net present value and benefit cost ratio, as well as improving safety to our customers. From a resource stewardship, we spoke about the physical environment improved through dark skies. And also, as energy is more efficiently used, it provides more of our carbon-free hydro for us. We have the legal authority to do this, but we will need to work closely with legal and procurement grants, all those items. And there is some workforce implications. We have 1,300 hours spread over the next two years. A majority of the install work will be done by a contractor, but there is always support work that's needed, and so those have been included. Mostly positive stakeholder implications, although, to be honest, there will probably be some customers that will call and be like, we don't like this. There just always are with change. That's where we've worked with the cities and the county to say, hey, can you work with your constituents on this as well? And so they've willing to do that. So our cities and our county will spend less money on streetlight energy and maintenance costs. So from that perspective, they can use those funds to help benefit other projects support their constituents who are also our customers. For example, if the cities or the county went out and did a project like this with an energy service company, they would be charged at least a 30% overhead on that. And so they would not receive the same sort of savings that they could through this project. And then also the state agencies, Commerce and the Transportation Improvement Board, have been very supportive of doing a whole county project. They haven't had something like that occur with a PUD leading, sort of managing the project in this manner. And so they've been supportive of that. And then as we get to our values, we've talked a little bit about this earlier when we were going over the benefits, but it supports our strategy of the best for the most for the longest. It brings latest and best streetlight technology to the whole county. It's got an expected life of 20 years. We have warranties up to they have warranties up to 10 years that where they replaced for free. And then we move through and operational excellence. We can leverage our grant funding with our conservation incentives to help with this. And so it's a project that brings in multiple financial streams. So this is where I'll just
Andrew, what is that? Can you explain that a little bit to me? Sure. So I get the leveraging grant funding, but the conservation incentives?
Yes. And so we have we provide conservation incentives to for our energy efficiency programs. And what we do is we value any incentive that we get and the savings of that energy over that life against the value that brings to us from a wholesale market perspective. And so those incentives is a number that we pay out expecting to get back a certain amount of energy savings that then we can take to the market. Does that answer? Okay. I'd be free. I'd be happy to also, anytime if you're interested from a individual perspective, to go over some of that more. So, but,
it's an eye
chart. Oh. I'm not going to expect you guys to know this, but I wanted to show some of the planning work that has been going into place. So this is our general plan chart. What you'll see is what we've done here moving forward slide is taken a whole bunch of work that's there, and at least over the next couple quarters, next year or so, break out some of the really critical items. So one of those is securing additional commerce funds, and so we plan to put up application in 1st of March. We need to get standards agreed to by stakeholders. That's the kind of light that they would like to put in. Expect to do that Q2. New streetlight agreements. So there will be some changes to streetlight agreements with these, with local governments. As we change those, the board will need to take action on those, and so you would see that type of work. We need to secure the Transportation Improvement Board funds. I'd like to do that in Q2 as well. And then they'll be going out to bid. And before we go out to bid, there'll be board action associated with that. We look to do that at the end of this year, with an award to contract for install early next year. Again, board action would be required with contractor installing the lights in 2018. So that broken down into that. So there's a lot more work that's going on, but those are sort of the high points. So in summary, I think it's a unique and timely opportunity. We can take grant funds with our energy efficiency incentives to relight the county. We'll use our experience and expertise managing the project, and we'll partner with, collaborate with our cities and county as we support them and how they engage their communities. And I think that's really good, bringing both of the groups together, because this is a project that benefits them. It's a project that can benefit us, and so having them as partners in this is, I think, a great opportunity there. So we're looking for feedback. We're looking for questions, and going from this to this.
Andrew, I have a question. You mentioned this is streetlights only, but will we be modifying any of the lights that are in the PUD parks?
I think those will be taken on a case-by-case basis, looking at, I don't know of any plans to do that yet, but that is something that I know that has been looked into. but hasn't been moved on yet. And so we have the numbers of those lights now. Now we have the information on all of them, and we could come up with some sort of a value of that to us. But at this point in time, no.
So that brings a question. So haven't we done something with the lighting in the parks to deal with light pollution several years ago? We had some complaints, I remember.
I'll have to get back to you on that. I'm not aware of that off the top of my head, but I can follow up on that for you.
I'll go back and look in my email, too.
Additional questions? Before the meeting started, Andrew and I had a brief conversation. I was down in a couple of weeks ago in Arizona and went into a neighborhood that was after dark, and I was looking for a gas station. All of a sudden, I realized things looked really, really different. And they have gone through exactly this, the LED lighting. And there's an adjustment period there because I was looking for a gas station. And I always, you know, we're trained to look for bright lights. Well, there's no bright lights anywhere anymore. But the gas station was right there and very, very visible. So it wasn't that it wasn't visible. It's just I've been trained to look for bright lights. And so, but the visibility was really good. So anyway, that's just a comment. Any other comments? So you'll be coming back to us shortly as if things proceed.
Absolutely.
According to plan.
Absolutely. And I'll be providing, I provide energy efficiency updates during our general energy resource quarterly updates. And so unless something happens in between those, I would plan to give regular status updates along with those as well.
Super.
Yep.
Question on the picture on the right. It looks as if you're looking down the road there, the light turns yellow again. Is that that's an example of the old lights compared to the new LEDs?
Right. So this is all the section of the old.
Yes.
And then you can see in the same picture was it the new. And this, of course, was the whole area.
Perfect.
This is somewhere over on the west side.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
I believe that's all the items for our study session. We can now move into our business session. Commissioners, the first item on the business session is our consent agenda, which has been modified to include resolutions 8, 9, 10, and 11. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Mr. Chairman, I move we approve the consent agenda as modified.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda as modified. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. So now we're down to resolution number 12.
Resolution authorizing amendment number 2 to services agreement SA number 15-019 with Utiliworks Consulting LLC to provide AMI or automated metering infrastructure consulting services. Sam Dilley will present.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Sam Dilley in project management. Today I have a resolution to amend a contract with Utiliworks Consulting. We have an existing service agreement with them. I think you'll recall 2 weeks ago, Dale Pennington from Utiliworks was here and we talked about automatic metering infrastructure. Had a number of good comments, a good study session on that. This resolution would authorize us to continue working with Utiliworks for the foreseeable future through several steps. Most notably, initially, would be customer outreach, as we had talked about a couple weeks ago. Other steps that we might be looking to interact with Utiliworks and continue investigating is after we got done with customer outreach, if it was a favorable outcome and we decided to move forward with the AMI project, we'd be looking at doing things like a request for proposals, and we'd be working with Utiliworks for that sort of thing, conducting business discovery and process analysis of our existing business systems. How do we currently use our meter reading department? How do we currently use our metering system and our billing systems? And what would we need to change if we went to a two-way metering system? Other things we might do: negotiate a MDMS meter data management software contract, negotiate an AMI contract with a third-party vendor, and also this service agreement would allow us to continue work up through a proof of concept engagement. Proof of concept being the district would potentially install at some point in the future and many of these meters out in the system, bring that data back and begin working with that information, attempting to understand how the district's business processes would flow, what sort of staff we would need, and those sorts of things in order to use the AMI system. With that, I'd open it up to questions.
Any questions?
I'd just like to make a comment, actually, that timing is everything, and I just happened to notice there was a show on television Sunday that talked about the smart home, and what is available today is that homeowners can monitor the electrical usage in their home right down to the point that where the washing machine kicks on, and it will, through this tablet, tell you exactly how much electricity is being used the moment that that motor comes on in the washing machine. And then instantaneously, once that motor kicks off, it demonstrates how much electricity has been reduced in terms of the usage. It has this ability for every electrical appliance in your home can be monitored by the amount of electricity that it's using. And what you're really trying to discover is, where are you leaking electricity? Where are you spending money that is needless that you don't have to spend? And so that is being employed around the country outside of Chelan County. And so as we march forward into the future and we take a look at home monitoring and we have customer owners who want to be a participant in that marketplace so that they can monitor the holes of electricity in their home, particularly since we've just had this cold snap and people are experiencing large prices for their energy bill because of gaps and losses of electricity through heat usage, it just becomes smarter for all of us to be concerned and provide an access way to be able to monitor what's going on in the electric home of today. And more importantly, what's going on in the electric home of tomorrow, because whether we participate or not, it's coming, and it's already taking place in other parts of the country. So I think this is a great move and step forward.
It really is a revolution in the electrical distribution system. Being able to have two-way control of meters is the business case that we conducted showed that it was, you know, a positive return on our investment for Chelan PUD, but also talking about the benefits to the customers, the ability to monitor their use and understand what their dynamics are and what their market drivers are for them. It steps up to meeting the best for our customers.
Absolutely. And I'm going to go one step further and tell everyone that we have a Nest thermostat at our home. Mm-hmm. And while we're struggling a little bit as to how to best use it, the one feature that it does really well that helps my wife and I to conserve our energy costs is, on a monthly basis, it tells me how much energy I've used. And then I'm not so surprised when I get my electric bill. But more importantly, it allows me to dial back on a thermostat. That, okay, I'll go put a sweater on, because I know if I don't, my bill's going to be bigger. And without the ability to know how much usage of electricity is going on in your home, you really are ineffective at trying to control and cut back on your electric expense. So I just can't say enough about the direction that the smart home is going.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioners, we have a resolution before us, Resolution 12. What is the wish of the commission?
I would move that we approve services agreement with UtilaWorks Consulting to provide AMI consulting services for the PUD.
Is there a second?
Second.
So moved and seconded that we approve Resolution 12, which is a services agreement with UtilaWorks Consulting. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. All right. We now move down to item 13, which is a proposed motion. Do I turn to Eric or Steve on this?
I think we're going to probably turn to John Stoll or Ron Slabaugh. This is a motion to approve the
water plans.
The water plan, yeah. First water day. That's why I was concerned. You didn't look like Ron Slabaugh today.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? I haven't seen you in about 2 hours.
Pretty fair. Good afternoon, commissioners. We are ready today to request that the board formally adopt the PUD water system plan. Might recall last year came to you first with this plan on October 3rd, and we just discussed the next steps associated with the overall approval process of the water system plan and also our water use efficiency plans for all of our water systems. Came back to the board with a detailed presentation on October 17th for both of those plans. We advertised in the four major newspapers, Leavenworth Chelan, Cashmere, and the Wenatchee World on October 19th and 26th, invited public comment. We received none. Came back to the board on November 7th, requested approval of the water use efficiency plans, which the board approved. We followed up with Department of Health later that month, sent all the follow-up documentation to Health for their review, sent additional requested documentation to Health in about mid-January. Department of Health got back to us on January 23rd that we had satisfied all their requirements and that they were prepared to approve the plan after receiving notification that the board had adopted the Wenatchee Water System Plan. So that's all that's left. So we're just here today with a motion to adopt the PUD number 1 of Chelan County Water System Plan that was presented to the board on October 17th and November 7th of 2016. Any questions?
And the commissioners, what we typically do is send along the minutes reflecting the motion and the approval thereof, assuming it's approved. Okay.
Commissioners? Since Commissioner McKenna was not on the board at that time, he may have been here, but it would probably be appropriate if we're going to approve it that we don't put him on the spot.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept resolution number 13.
Motion
number 13. To adopt the Public Utility District Number 1 of Chelan County Water System Plan presented to the Board of Commissioners October 17 and November 7, 2016.
I second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt motion number 13 relating to the water system plan. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Okay, item 14.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
Now you're up, Dave.
We didn't mean to make you gun shy.
No, now it's my turn. I'm excited. good afternoon, commissioners. Dave Nelson, a business advisor for Generation and Transmission. And I have a motion for you today. I want to take some time to give you a little bit of background on why we need this project budget revision, and a little bit of a lessons learned on what we could have done to avoid having to come back at this point to ask for that. Going back, when we were originally doing the B5 to B10 modernization project, B10 was the first unit that was completed. After that, we ordered turbines and wicket gate components for two more units, B9, and then another unit, which at the time was planned to be B5. We used the B9 components and completed that unit, but then the project was then put on hold before we completed B5. And at that point in time, we'd already authorized the purchase, manufacturing, and purchase of the turbine and wicket gates for that unit. And so those we received those parts and have stored them for a number of years now. And the proper accounting for that was to treat those as a deferred asset and not as construction work in process anymore. So we moved them out of the project into a deferred asset account on our balance sheet until we determined what we would be doing with those, either putting them into use or some other resolution. So when we started to look at evaluating these units and picking up where we left off and completing our modernization of B5 through B10, what we looked at was using those turbine and wicket gate components in one of the units, and initially we had planned to reuse the other turbines for the other three units. So in 2014, we got approval from the board to do that, and we're planning to use this turbine and wicket gates in unit B8. In 2015, we had done more economic analysis, and I would just note that we were treating those turbine and wicket gate components at that time as sunk costs because we'd already purchased them, paid for them, had them. So when we were looking at the economics and the evaluation of moving forward or picking back up, we just wanted to look at the costs going forward. So in 2015, we looked a little bit more at the value we would get of in the increased efficiencies of completing all the units with these new turbines, improved efficiencies. Really looked like they would pay off for us. We came back to the board and got approval to put the new turbines that are in B10, B9, and the one we'd purchased for B5, and we're planning to use in B8. And so we decided in 2015 to go ahead and purchase new turbines for B5, 6, 7, and we already had the ones for one set for B8. At that time, we determined that since B6 was the unit we had determined was the next unit to be worked on, we allocated or planned to use those parts, the turbine and wicket gates that were originally for B5, now in B6. Since they were already here, wouldn't delay our schedule of planning and construction, and then went ahead and ordered the parts and pieces for the following units, or we'll do that as we release those units. So at the time we established those budgets, we established a budget for $31.3 million for B5, $31.3 million for B7, and also the same for B8. B6, we established a budget of $27.1 million based on the costs, only looking at the costs to complete the unit, not including the $3.6 million of deferred costs that we had, deferred costs on the balance sheet that we'd already paid for, this turbine and wicket gates. So what we really should have done was, the economic analysis was fine to treat those as sunk costs, but what we should have done was included those $3.6 million in the project costs for B6 when we approved the project, because we really don't want to put those back into an old project and that doesn't make sense anymore. We're not using them in B5. We're going to be using them in B6. We want to aggregate all those costs together with the cost of modernizing unit B6. And so that's why we're here today, because we really didn't think about the fact that we needed room in the budget to accommodate those costs, even though we'd already paid for them. The money is already spent. We had them here on site. So we didn't include them in our $27.1 million budget. But we're asking today for a motion to increase that by $3.6 million to accommodate those costs in the project budget for B6.
Okay. Questions, Commissioner?
Dave, I just want to say thank you for bringing that forward and being very transparent about it. And I appreciate it, and our customers really appreciate it.
Can you go back? So where are we at with B5? I lost track of...
It worked then, huh? right now, we are planning to B6 is currently being worked on. So that's the first unit of the four remaining in that series, B5, 6, 7, and 8, that need to be modernized. The next unit that we are planning to work on is B7. B5 is currently... we're going to work on that one after B7 is our plan, and then B8. So it's just further down the road of when we would do those units.
Great. So. I knew you were just trying to confuse me from that.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, if I was listening.
Yeah, what we did is kept moving that. We moved those a couple of times in our thinking of where we were going to use them based on which unit was going to be appropriate. At first, we thought B8 would be appropriate, and the reason for that was really just to have those three units together. Nearest the center of the dam, nearest the spillway, and just be the most frequently used units. They'd have the most efficient turbines. That's where we were going to plan to use it. When we decided we were going to put it in all four of those units, it made sense to then go ahead and use it in B6. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any additional questions? You have one?
No.
Oh. Anybody, any member of the audience have any questions? Thank you very, very much. We appreciate, as Commissioner Congdon said, the transparent nature. We understand that from the county standpoint, we need to have that accurate number. We understand. Thank you.
You know, Mr. Chairman, I'll move to add $3.6 million to the Rock Island Powerhouse 1 B6 Modernization Project budget for a total revised project budget of $30.7 million. I'll make that motion individually. I think it's important.
Okay. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It moved and seconded to approve motion number 14, which adds $3.6 million to Rock Island Powerhouse 1 B6 Modernization Project. Is there any discussion of the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
So I think this one is mine, Commissioner. Item 15 is a motion seeking the board's approval for my office to file as necessary foreclosure actions on unpaid and now 2 years delinquent LUD assessments. So this, as the board knows, the district has a number of local utility districts that we have developed and created in both water and wastewater here. And each year, as we collect those assessments, as the board knows, I guess maybe for Commissioner McKenna, as we create the LUDs, we assess the total value and cost, and then we apportion those costs by special assessment out proportionate to the benefit to the property that receives that new utility service. So each year we staff, I should say, does an excellent job of managing all of those payments throughout the life of the payments. The statute does require that we file statutory liens, which become by statute super priority liens on the real properties that are assessed, those costs. And each year at the end of the year, we do an assessment. I keep saying we staff does an assessment. I'm meaning by that it's not me personally, of whether or not there are still delinquent assessments. In the event that there are delinquent assessments, then the statutes require us to foreclose those assessments by March 1 of each year. So this year is the first year in a while where we do indeed have one delinquent LUD assessment that has now been delinquent for 2 years, which is the longest it can go under the statute. So I do need and am seeking the board's consent to filing those actions on or before February 28th of this year. Should it become necessary, I will tell the board that we will continue to do absolutely everything possible to get those assessments either paid or on an acceptable program for payment to avoid instituting any foreclosure proceedings and incurring those costs on behalf of the district. But I do need the authority before we can file. So, questions about that or the process? I know that it's been a while. We've talked about this. Some of you have been here a while before, but it is a statutory process that we follow. It's the same process that the cities and towns follow for their improvement districts.
Is there just one at this point?
At this point, there is one. Actually, that's really good news because we had a handful, and staff has worked really diligently over the last couple of months, and we're down to simply one that we are still working on.
Okay. Commissioners?
I would move that we authorize General Counsel to file foreclosure actions on or before February 28th, 2017, as appropriate to enforce and collect delinquent LUD assessments.
Motion's made. Is there a second?
Second the motion.
Moved and seconded to authorize General Counsel to file foreclosure actions on or before February 28th, 2017, as appropriate, and to enforce and collect delinquent LUD assessments. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Manager items.
We've got three today, so I want to invite Michelle Smith and Jeff up to talk about the Odabashian property, south of the Odabashian Bridge property meetings that we had last week. Look at what the future use of that property will be. We did complete the acquisition of the property. I believe I signed the paperwork last week. And so we're now moving on to next steps.
Thank you, Steve. I wanted to introduce Jeff Osborne. He's our supervisor of license implementation and compliance, and he's taking on the Odabashian FERC filing and all the efforts, and so I'm going to let him today give you an update on our public meetings last week.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to give you an update today. And as Michelle said, she's passed me the baton, so now it's up to me to make sure I run with it and don't drop it. So. But as you know, we had two public meetings last week for the what we are calling the Odabashian Recreation Natural Area property. Thank you for bringing that up on the screen behind it. So there's lots of additional information on our webpage. We had two meetings, one on the 15th here at the Chelan PUD Auditorium, one on the 16th, excuse me, over at the Douglas County Public Services Building. We had two citizens on Wednesday and 20 on Thursday. They came in and provided us input. And the bottom line is we really received overwhelming support for the project and for the idea of minimal recreation disturbance, but also keeping it as a natural area, but kind of holding that property in its natural state, allowing the recreation opportunities there, as well as preserving the natural features of that area. So that was a real good support for us continuing on this path. A lot of the users were people that used the trail a lot and were familiar with the area, so that was good that we had a lot of the local citizenry that participated. Again, we had a number of questions regarding the ports proposed development in that area and how that associated. You know, most of the property that the port is looking at is on the upside of the loop trail and also on the upstream side of the bridge, but how that interacted with what we're proposing to do here. Lisa Parks from the port was there, and she had a few boards as well, so that was some really good interaction between what the PUD in cooperation with Chelan Douglas Land Trust and other partners were doing with this properties and how that was going to be fitting well with what the port is proposing to do in the adjacent lands. So as you are likely aware, you know, this is going to be something that as we move through this is going to require a filing with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission as we shift some properties around in within the project boundary and then designate this as part of our recreation plan. So that's where I come in to try and make sure that that all goes as smoothly as possible. And then one of the most important aspects of this is we felt that we needed a new name other than the Odabashian property. So they have the names here, as you can see a little bit on there, and the input, we sought a lot of input during the meetings and also have the survey here, as you can see. So we're encouraging everyone, the public, to put their two cents in, if you will, and provide us some input on something that may be a little bit more catchy than Odabashian property. So we're going to have that input provided through the 28th, and then we'll be bringing a more detailed report. We're scheduled right now for the 6th, I believe, to come back and give you a little bit more detailed update and information on what this all looks like and the naming convention and where we are in the process. So that's pretty much our very, very quick update for today. So can I answer any questions you might have?
You already started voting on the name?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think that started on the 14th. So vote early, vote often. I think that's how that goes.
Might have to get online.
Mm-hmm.
See one up there I like.
By the way, I just wanted to note we fixed the typo there and a name to tribute, where it says a name to tribute to tribute. So those of you that have that are catchy for details, I just wanted to point out we know about that, and we're waiting for the system to update.
Oh,
to
make okay.
That thank you.
I was going to talk to you offline.
I know you guys are detailed. I was always going to pick up on that.
All right. Thank you. Any questions? Thank you for all your hard work on this.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next up, annually, we make changes to rates and fees for the fiber program. That's an authority that's delegated to the general manager, but we keep you informed of the where we're going. So Mike Coleman will be making that presentation for you.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Mike Coleman, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom. As Steve said, we have a requirement to look at our fees and charges annually, and this goes back to a resolution the board passed in 2012, resolution number 1213731. The board delegated authority to the general manager to adjust fees and charges related to the fiber and telecommunications system. The resolution did direct that an analysis be prepared that identifies the existing or forecasted changes and their drivers. The general manager or designee will discuss the revised fees and charges and the analysis with the district's commission during an informational or budget presentation, and that the discussion with the commission will occur prior to any changes being finalized. And last, that the changes that may impact service providers will be communicated at the earliest possible opportunity. The fees and charges were to be reviewed annually, and the purpose of the annual review is to ensure that costs are being accurately captured. The staff and general manager will discuss these changes with the board prior to their implementation. So, not only are we completing our annual review, but we are making a couple of changes. As part of the rate process, we added three new services, the voice over IP quality of service, the internet protocol multicast quality of service, and we also added the coarse wave division multiplexing wavelength service, also known as a lambda. And so we have a fee of $800 that is to cover our costs in setting up the quality of service with voice over IP, and that's applicable for each service provider. We have a fee of $2,000 that's applicable to each service provider that requests internet protocol multicast video services, and that again covers the network setup and implementation. And last, we have that fee of $1,050, which is applicable to each wavelength service, again, covering the setup and implementation. And we would make these changes effective April 1st in conjunction with the new rate tables. So what I passed out was the schedule that contains the non-recurring charges and fees. And the first two are in Schedule 100, and the last one is in Schedule 300 with their applicable services. Any questions?
Any questions? We do appreciate the update. Okay. Very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you.
And I should have said up front, there's no board action required since it is delegated authority.
Right. Last item is I want to provide you an update on substations, the projects that we're looking at in Leavenworth and Chelan. So Chad Rissman and John Stoll will be presenting today with some graphics.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. Just maybe a quick recap. We had the meeting in Leavenworth last week on the 13th. I know Commissioner Smith and Commissioner McKinnon were in attendance, but thought we had a pretty good turnout. We had about 30 folks show up, a lot of active discussion about all three properties, different pros and cons we went over. So felt that was a very productive meeting. We left with some more input, and as we've talked, we'll be condensing all that and putting it together and coming in March, starting with the 6th, to kind of go through each site for both of these areas. So, again, I think Leavenworth it was a successful night. We are still receiving input. I think we actually had at least one email I saw came in with, again, more input around the Leavenworth. So, that brings us to today, and tomorrow night is our Chelan update at City Hall in Chelan to go over the three sites that Chad and Gary Rice have been working on with the engineering firm and to present to the community. So with that, I was going to turn it over to Chad to just give you a preview of those three sites, what we're seeing from, again, high-level cost analysis, what it looks like, some of the issues we're dealing with the Chelan substation sites.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Chad Rissman. Didn't quite get the final draft of our presentations and boards put together, so in order to see the real nice ones, you'll have to come Wednesday night, I guess. Maybe that's a bit of a tease. So Gary's added some more detail. Gary's a project manager on this, and we're just receiving some of this information in from the consultants and trying to process it and put it in presentable format for Wednesday night, but wanted to give a preview to you prior to Wednesday. So one of the things we're noticing about the Chelan area is that the substation sites that we've identified are a little ways away from the load center. So as we're understanding the cost estimates, budgetary cost estimates for each one of these sites for comparison purposes, we're noticing that in order to get the distribution back down to where the load center is, and I'll describe that. Maybe, John, you can hand me the microphone so I can talk up there. But what we're noticing, there's a significant amount of distribution that's going to need to be built in order to carry the capacity down to where the areas that's needed, the load growth is anticipated and the current need is. So there's a significant cost of that. One of the things that we identified with the focus group is that further we move out the substation away from the load center, the more lines that we will have to build inside. Same thing with the transmission. The further we build the station away from the transmission line, the more transmission we'll have to build. But the substation facility itself could be placed further away. So there are all these trade-offs, and I think we've been talking about these trade-offs throughout the course of the project. So if I can stand up here and talk about just the Chelan Heights site, for example. So this illustrates, as an example, the distribution cost. So the Chelan site is located, Boyd Road comes down and around and wraps around up here. So we're up here a ways for the Chelan Heights site. And this yellow is the distribution circuits that would need to be built. So what engineering has done is identified where the injection points need to be within the distribution system and where there's adequate infrastructure in order to accept those injection points of additional capacity. So there's a significant amount of distribution that needs to be built. So between the stations themselves are within what we've been seeing recently, between somewhere around $3 to $3.5 million for the substations themselves, some more on top of that for earth costs and things. But the significant costs associated with these are with the three sites that we've identified are between $5 and $8 million each for distribution related costs. One of the things Gary wanted me to make sure to point out is, we talked about it just a few minutes ago, but there are aesthetic interests and issues associated with more lines in the air. In one of the examples on some of the routes, we would be using the existing transmission line potentially. So there's the existing overhead facilities. We would end up likely having to rebuild the transmission line with taller poles, and then we would have some underbuild distribution on them. So we would have the three wires for the transmission, taller structures, and then three additional wires for the distribution. In the event that we would build two circuits on there, we would have another two distribution circuits. We have another set of lines over here too. So with the overhead component, there's some trade-offs again.
That's the second addition would be in case you had to double up the substation?
We're still looking closer at the routes versus where the substation site is versus where the injection points need to be. What would be the best routes to get from point A to point B? Most of the sites all have a fair amount where it looks like the best route would be on the transmission. So in terms of timing of building the distribution facilities, I don't know that we would build all of these facilities right away. That's something that we could present, we could propose. They all wouldn't be needed necessarily right away, so maybe we'd phase them in over the next few years, just a concept that we could further explore. So just as a reminder, the three different sites, these particular visuals here, not real detailed, but the second one we're referring to as, this is the Washington Federal Savings, not Western Federal, so there's a typo on here. But that's the parcels that we were looking at right above the golf course. They're currently owned by Washington Federal that are in consideration. The other one is a little bit further up, so the Chelan Heights facility was right about down here. And this is the Urick Orchard site that's up Winesap and Boyd Road kind of junction up there. Again, you can see the fair amount of distribution facilities that would need to be upgraded, improved, built, as shown with the yellow lines there. So
that yellow indicates all of that would need to be upgraded?
To some extent, yes.
And how many miles is that approximately?
So for the Urick site, that's 8.3 miles.
Wow.
Can you, Chad, could you point out where Winesap is? Can you draw Winesap into that map?
Winesap substation?
Avenue. Winesap Avenue. Oh.
Gary, do you remember where?
It comes off. It
comes up right here.
So could you show that on the other one, the first one? The Chelan.
The site referred to as Chelan Heights. So this is, that Winesap is up here. So the Urick site's up here.
So what are the crossroads there at where that site is?
Do you remember? Say Boyd Road.
The Chelan site is right here.
Okay, Winesap is this one.
Loops here, around, right? Yeah.
The Chelan site is
just right at this cross, right here.
Okay. Is there a road that runs through there? Not really right now.
No.
Orchard there?
Yeah, it's about 4,900 feet or 4,800 feet of orchard access road to get to the Chelan Heights site. That's one of the downfalls of that site.
So overall project costs are currently estimated, and these are unit cost estimates, not design cost estimates, so there's some further refinement to do when we start getting closer to a site. But the Chelan Heights site, and this is primarily due to the distribution costs, the Chelan Heights has the least amount of distribution at $9.1 million. Then is the Washington Federal and the Urick sites are basically the same at $12.3 million.
That's the total, or that's just the that's the total, including the substation?
Correct. That's transmission, distribution, the substation site itself, placeholder for the property, and site excavation.
As a point of reference, what are the estimated costs on the Leavenworth site?
They were, Gary's very prepared. They are from $7.75 million, $7.9 million to $8.4 million for the three sites. And truly,
each of those had somewhere between $750,000 to, what was the highest, $1.6 million for distribution-related costs. The costs associated with that one were some transmission costs. Remember, we had to build some, or at least proposing, looking at building some additional transmission facilities in order to serve those various sites. So.
And were those on existing lines, or those were new lines? I forgot to ask that.
The transmission, what's being proposed or being looked at now, there's a new section of transmission line that would create a physical loop that would separate the line. There's existing distribution facilities along Fox Road, but that would be a transmission line. So not sure how much that's been.
That was my question. If it was actually whether it was a distribution or transmission, it was an existing line. People were used to having something there.
True, but quite a bit of difference between transmission and distribution. So there was some additional outreach we decided to go down there would likely need to, because that's just something recently that's came up when we started analyzing the various sites and some of the advantages and disadvantages of them.
The two Chelan sites, the Urich and the Chelan Heights Orchard, they're fairly close to the transmission, almost directly under, so it's really just a pretty close tap, where the bank property, golf course property, has a longer tap to get up to that potential site, maybe a couple hundred yards.
I was just going to comment, you know, I guess I'm like everybody else. When I see that this is getting close to my house or potentially close to Winesap, you saw me get up and go take a really close look. That's just how it is. You know, I want to have an unobstructed view of the lake, and that's what we're dealing with. I get it.
Yeah, hearing that.
We will have, even though we may have the substations a little bit further away and in the agrarian areas, as the community has preferred, there will be more wire in the air.
And John, actually, that's one of my questions. As I look at the amount of wire that's going to be in the air, are we trading issues with the location of a substation for distribution lines that folks will see? Do we expect any kind of a pushback with respect to how many miles we're going to be putting up in the air for these various locations?
I think that's a reasonable expectation that there will be concerns.
So you know, more kudos to you guys for all the outreach, all the background work you've done, it's just critical that we educate all of our customers and everybody in the area that, you know, that this could be considered a trade-off. Just need to get all that information out and maps and good diagrams out to the community.
So as John said, Wednesday night, 6:00, Chelan City Hall.
6:00, yes. We've been in contact with the mayor of Chelan, and he's been, you know, getting the word out and has been promoting this, and I believe plans on attending as well. Would like to recognize Gary. I know he was scrambling all weekend still, you know, trading information with folks to get the best presentation material available. And so again, thank you. Plus, very active in the community meetings, leading the discussion.
And then we'll be back here March 6th presenting, correct?
Yep, March 6th. And our format, it'll probably be more informal on the 6th. We'll probably have whatever the current most updated version of the sites. We'll probably have handouts of the public feedback we've received to date, open discussion. But this is a good opportunity if there's some expectation the board might have. But that's our approach at this point, and allow for some more soak time when we would come back on the 20th. And then, you know, we would be seeking a preferred sites to be moving forward on.
Chad, would you speak for a second to, on that yellow, how much is underbuild versus new construction, or there's nothing there today?
The sections of line that are straight are generally following the transmission lines. Those were built in a straight line. So this portion right here, underbuild, there's a portion in here that's an underbuild. in here that's under build. So where you can see it's kind of crooked, it's following the streets, and that's primarily distribution. Where it's longer straight line, those are the underbuild. So that's so,
how much of that would be new poles versus bigger poles? I mean, it sounds like most of it already has lines there.
Correct.
But it's just transmission rather than distribution.
And the transmission and distribution lines, poles, would have to be replaced.
Right.
More than likely.
Right.
There'll be some cases where we can reuse some, but that'll be subject to an analysis.
Right.
Generally, they were built in order to support the lines that were planned. They weren't built with additional capacity.
Right.
So.
Okay.
That answer your question?
Yeah. And that's true on the other pictures as well, right? Right. Basically, the majority of the yellow is underbuild, as I understand it.
Okay. So it's not new lines per right. se. It's right. just.
Which, you know.
Yeah.
Will make some difference. Taller.
Right.
With more wires. But. Different from if you're trying to put something where there's nothing today.
Yep. Thank you. Randy, tomorrow night, how many
commissioners?
You bet.
I just want to say how much I appreciated the presentation up in Leavenworth the other day. That's a touchy subject for people, to say the least. But I just thought it was a great meeting. You know, the information and the choices. The acceptance of people's questions and ideas and concerns. You guys just did a great job, all of you. And I really appreciated that. I thought it was an exceptional meeting.
We've had thank you, Commissioner. We've had a really strong team working on it. A lot of folks have been putting their oar in the water and pushing this thing forward. Sean Seaman did a nice job up there. Andy Wendell, Chad, Gary, Suzanne Hartman, Megan, who's been filling in for Tika. You know, we really hopefully haven't missed a beat. By the way, she's back today, so just in time for Chelan.
Commissioner Smith, I think you were going to ask the question I had.
Yes. Tomorrow evening, if there's more than two of us that wish to be at that meeting, we need to declare a special meeting. Ann's going to be there.
I will not be able to attend.
I'm not going to be there. You will? So there'll be two people there. So we do not need to declare a meeting.
Thank you, Sheila.
You bet.
Okay. Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Really great job.
Commission items.
I have nothing exceptional.
Okay.
I just wanted to make a comment on last week's Waputa meeting in Olympia, where we had our legislative lunch, and was very well attended. This is where the Waputa organization brings in a lunch, which is served in the Capitol building. And we have both aides and we have legislators that are invited to attend. Last year, the number, which was a very good record-setting number of attendees, was around 300. This year, the number was around 400. So it is something that is really gaining traction and getting quite a bit of recognition in Olympia. And of course, that helps the Waputa effort. Additionally, we served coffee in the morning. And that is, it's amazing to me how much coffee we can go through in the morning when you hand it out for free.
Starbucks coffee.
Starbucks coffee. And that first question out of everyone's mouth is it good coffee? Well, we say, what's Starbucks? And it just flies off the shelf. We, as a matter of fact, had to run back to Starbucks a number of times to get additional 10-gallon jugs of coffee.
White chocolate mochas?
Yeah. No, nothing that fancy. Sorry.
There was. We had half and half to go.
We did have half and half. But it's just a wonderful day that is spent up on Capitol Hill, getting a lot of recognition. It's amazing how many hands you can shake of the legislators that come out and appreciate the coffee, and they appreciate having lunch, but also just getting a break from their office and daily routines and chatting with constituents. So. Wonderful event.
My comment about that, Gary covered it really very well, but that one of the big differences of what we were doing last week is when you stop that aide or that legislator with a cup of coffee and an invite to lunch, they're not avoiding you, they're smiling. I mean, you're developing a relationship, and I know Chelan was there, Kim was there with the setup in the lunch, the room where lunch was, PUDs all over the hill. People knew we were there. It was a great event. And next week, some of us will be going back to Washington, D.C. for the American Public Power fly-in to talk about the issues such as the Columbia River Treaty, vegetation management, municipal bonds, tax-exempt status or taxable status thereof, and other issues. So it's a busy time here as a PUD commissioner. Any other commission items? Follow-up on delegation of action items.
We had five things from the last meeting. Review the gas to electric correlation. You should have received an email from us on that. Commissioner McKenna is going to work with Scott Bune on the snow survey date. I think there's at least an option available for that.
Set.
Good. We owe you back the negotiation results on the Rocky Rate Spillway Gate Bearing Replacement Project. That'll come as part of the quarterly review that we do for any project like that. We committed to further developing the reserve fund for facilities planning. We are going to bring that back to you. We'll be having a conversation about public power benefit generally, and probably have a conversation about reserve planning as well as part of that conversation that will likely be in the March or possibly April timeframe. And then we had committed to get you historical O&M and plant additions, looking at it inflation adjusted.
You should
receive that from Kelly.
Yeah.
I meant to do one other thing, and I'll just use this opportunity. I did attend the large Public Power Council CEO meeting that does happen three times a year. And just note that an awful lot of conversation about tax-exempt financing still, and whether there'll be a tax bill in this Congress, and trying to be prepared for that, and looking for options that would work for Chelan. Should something come forward, we very much continue to support tax-exempt financing, but are worried about whether that might be at risk and what alternatives there might be. And an awful lot of discussion about cybersecurity as well, particularly an issue around supply chain. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has proposed a standard, NERC has proposed a standard which would be subject to FERC review, having to do with being assured as a utility that you don't have malware in things that you buy. And the concern of the utility industry is we don't really have the capability to be able to scan everything we buy to find out whether there's a problem in it, so we could be held liable for something that we really can't be accountable for. So there's just a lot of conversation about how we attack this problem and recognize that there is a national security issue that needs to be addressed, but there are some things that we can't really manage, and we're going to need some help from the federal government on. That's it.
Okay. Any delegation from today?
Got one. Just go back to you on LED lights in our parks. There's a plan for that, so we will get back with you on that one.
If what we did do in terms of light pollution in our parks several years ago, mm-hmm. when there were some comments. Okay.
Is there any additional public comment? Eric, how much time was your portion of the executive session?
15 minutes.
Okay, so
I need to add 1 5-minute item on performance evaluation.
Okay. In that case, let's, after a 5-minute break, go into executive session to start at 2:40 and to be done by 3:40 for two purposes: to review the performance of a public employee as authorized by the RCWs, and to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district is or is likely to become party, as authorized by RCW 42.30.1101I. Let's take a break and come back in executive session. All right. Good afternoon. This is the Chelan PUD February 21, 2017 meeting. We have been in executive session and have just come out of executive session. It's about 3:58. No votes were taken, no decisions were made. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we stand adjourned.